Please help me welcome our speaker tonight, Julie D. from the South College Speakers Group in Newark, Delaware.
Hello, everyone. My name is Julie, and I'm an alcoholic. Thank you. I have a sobriety date of December 13th. 2009, and I'm very nervous, extremely nervous. So I have a sponsor, and I've also have the privilege of sponsoring others. And I would love to say thank you for asking me to come here tonight to share my experience, strength, and hope with you all. Let's see. My first introduction to Alcoholics Anonymous, or actually I should say, was Alateen. I come from a long line of alcoholics. My mother's an alcoholic. My father died from this disease. My grandfather's, my grandmother's. Normally what I say is I think I have a cousin and a great-grandmother who do not have this. Other than that, the rest of the family, we're good old drunks. And I grew up in an alcoholic family, and I was normal for me to, you know, come home and my father was passed out on the floor. That was just very normal for me to see that. And at this time, when my father was drinking, my mother was not. So I was an extremely shy person. My mother always said I was painfully shy. I would like to say I was socially retarded, very much so, that small talk, talking with anybody was, I could not do it. I could talk at home with my family, but I could not talk to teachers. I mean, I peed my pants in kindergarten because I could not ask the teacher to go to the bathroom. So talking to people extremely made me scared. My father drank all the time. As a matter of fact, I used to be the one who would go get his beers for him, and he would always let me have the last swig. Now, of course, those are horrible. That stuff doesn't taste good, the last one. So, I mean, I tried it and just didn't like it. And my mother always gave, you know, at holidays we were allowed to have alcohol. And, again, never liked the taste of alcohol. So growing up in a family with an alcoholic father, he was drunk most of the time, and he also liked to beat my mother and beat me as well. And so, but this was normal for me. This was not something that, you know, I thought there was anything wrong with. I really thought that this was a part of, you know, this was life, and this is what happened in every family. And as I got a little bit older, my father ended up committing suicide from this. He was unable to figure out why he could not stop drinking. And so I was about 9 years old then, and as soon as my father died, my mother picked up and started drinking. And so at that point, I'd seen a lot of alcohol in the house, and I had a lot of other family members who said, you know, your father was never an alcoholic because he only drank beer. And so I thought, okay. But from 9 to about 12, my mom drank a lot, and at that point I ended up being the person who would always, like, take the distributor cap off the car so that she couldn't go anywhere. She ended up trying to commit suicide many times. I took her to the hospital. And then finally one day she decided to get sober. So at 11 or 12, when she got sober, she decided I needed to go to Alateen. Well, that's not a place for someone like me to go to, because that would mean I would have to talk. And that was not something that I was willing to do. So I sat in those meetings, and the only thing I said is, my mother doesn't drink, so I don't need to be here. She doesn't drink anymore. And at this point, my mother finally figured out, I don't talk. So she thought, okay, I'm going to send her to a counselor. So she sent me to actually two counselors, a man and a woman, and the male counselor decided that I was being very stubborn and that he was going to wait me out. So every week I would go and sit in there and never say a word. And he thought this was me doing it, and I had no idea what to say. And then I had a woman counselor, And I did the same thing. The only difference was she finally said, you know what I want you to do? I want you to write in a journal what you do for the week. And then when you come back, I want you to read that. So I said, okay, fine, I can do that. I can take direction. And so I did. So I talked with her, and we ended up, you know, getting along great. But he still, every week, he's like, I'm going to wait her out. I'm going to wait her out. And I never spoke. And so after that, I finally got my first taste of alcohol. I never liked the taste of it, but I never had the effect of it before either. And I was about 16, and my brother was in college, and he came home, and he said, here, drink this. And I'm like, I don't like beer. I don't like the taste of it. And plus, I didn't like all the effects that it had done in my family. My father died. My mother was always, you know, falling down drunk. And I didn't want to do that. But he said, here, just drink it really quick. And so I did. And then he gave me another one and said, drink it really quick. And that's when I found God. I could talk. I could go out and socialize in the world. I could talk to boys. I could talk to teachers. I could talk to anybody. So after that night, I made it my goal to go out and to find out how I could get more alcohol. I didn't always have the chance to get it all the time, but I did seek it out as much as possible. And at 18, at that time, the drinking law was 18, and I worked in a bar from the time I was 16, and I was able to get the bartenders to give me drinks. But at 18, I was off and running. And I just kept drinking, and I thought, my only thought was, how am I going to have enough to keep this in my body so that I can live in this world? Because I could not do anything without having alcohol in me. I thought, well, you know, I knew my mom was an alcoholic, and I thought, well, I definitely don't want to drink in the morning. So I did try to limit that, but what ended up happening is that I drank until 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'd have to go to work at 6, so I was still drunk. So I just never did, and then when I was done with work or in the middle of work, I would have a drink, and that's how I was living my life. I was going to school, and life became a little bit easier for me. And my mom kept going back in and out of Alcoholics Anonymous, and you know, she would drink with me for a while, and then she'd quit. And she finally looked at me one day and said, you know, you have a problem. And I said, no, I don't. I don't have a problem. You know, I said, I can stop whenever I want. And, of course, about 2 years after that, I realized I can't stop. I have no control whatsoever. And so I decided, well, you know, maybe if I have a boyfriend, I can stop. So I got involved with a friend who was really just a good friend. And the only way the relationship could survive is if I was drunk all the time. And thank God I did not get married to him, but I almost did. And my mom and him were actually very close, and she thought this guy will calm her down because he was not a drinker. And for whatever reason, I did manage to always pick men who did not drink. But they watched me get drunk all the time. I don't know what that was, but... So eventually, one day, a friend of mine had asked me to travel to Florida and to move, and again, the only way that could happen is if I continuously stayed drunk, and I knew that if I was not drunk, then I couldn't function. I mean, I had boyfriends and all that stuff, and I had friends, but whenever I did not have alcohol in me, I could not communicate with anybody. So it was always kind of weird. The next day, I'm like petrified, totally petrified. Here I am sober, and it's not a good time for me to take a drink because they're not drinking, and I cannot say anything to anyone. So eventually, my mom found me in a bar and took me in, and I went into a treatment program. And I was 22 years old, and I went into treatment program, and then I lived in a halfway house for about 8 months. And in that halfway house, for whatever reason, the desire to drink was removed. And when I left there with my counselor telling me, you have all the tools you need, go out and live. So I did. And I went out, I was sober for about 15 years, and I got married, I had a daughter who spoke here a while back, and you know, life was pretty good. But what I did was that I ended up going to, I worked a lot. I became a workaholic, and for those 15 years, I worked constantly. I 6 days a week, 7 days a week, and I threw everything I had into that. And I got the house, the cars, the money, you know, I got all of that stuff, and, you know, life was going pretty well. And I was raising my daughter in an environment that was no drinking, only I didn't realize that I was just really dry. And eventually what happened is because my mother's also an alcoholic, she lives with me, my husband, he just stopped drinking when he met me, so I don't know. I don't think he's an alcoholic, but I don't know. And my brother's an alcoholic, and his wife and the kids and all that, they're all alcoholics as well. I totally forgot what I was talking about. Thank you. So I eventually started to take other substances because nobody was using in my family, and if I drank, they were going to smell it. So, you know, one is good, two is better, and life went on, and I started using all the time. And for a while there, I was really good at being able to, you know, use for like 3 weeks and then detox. Use and detox, use and detox. Even though that week of detox was pure hell. But I was able to do that for quite a long time, and I kept thinking, oh, well, this is not bad. This is not bad. I can live like this. Well, eventually you get older, and your body can't handle the detoxing. So what did I decide to do that in between the detoxing, I'm going to drink because that's going to help me get through. So that's what I started doing, and then, of course, I found out that the more I drank, and the more other things I put into my system, I was able to drink longer and do it longer. So it ended up becoming every day, 24 hours a day. What happened was that I had lost my job that I had had for almost 20 years. And the business had gone under. Had a lot of stock options. I lost everything. And my daughter went off to college. So it was really just me and my husband and my mom. And so I decided, didn't have a job, that I was going to make a full-time career of reading and taking drugs and drinking. And I lived upstairs in my bedroom for about 2 years. I only came out if somebody pounded on the door. Otherwise, I stayed there. I did not believe that I was hurting anyone because I wasn't going anywhere. I didn't see that I was causing any damage whatsoever. My daughter would call me from school, and even that was, she was in New York, and even that was just too much. It's like, I'm busy, I'm reading, you know, leave me alone. And I really thought that was good. I really thought that that was just a wonderful way to live my life. Now, I wasn't looking for a job because I didn't think I could find anything after being in the same position for 20 years. And I just, you know, really just went straight down that path to hell. And my daughter had become one of us and had sought out help. And she was going to AA. And my niece was going to AA as well. And I noticed that, you know, they were actually doing pretty good. But I mean, I noticed it, but it wasn't something that I wanted. I was still happy in my pile of shit that I was in. And they would come home. My niece moved in with me. My house always had open doors, and whoever wanted to live there could live there. And my niece, my nephew, my brother, they, you know, the door was always open. My mother was there. And my mother at this time had retired, and she was going through a depression. And she was also on mass amounts of medication. And there was this one day, and I'm giving her her medication. So she really wasn't getting it because I was making it into aspirin, filing it all down, giving her what I thought she should have, and taking the real stuff that she had. But she had gotten these fentanyl patches, and I'm sorry if I'm talking about drugs, but it's just part of my story. And she had put one on, and she has 10 of them, and they're supposed to be every 3 days. And I find the box is empty, and I'm like, Mom, what are you doing? I go down, and she has 7 of these patches on her. Okay. So I'm like, so what do? I pull them all off of her, and I go upstairs, and I put them all on me. Okay. Now, I didn't know about how else you're supposed to get the stuff off of there. If I did, I would have done that, but I learned that in here. And but so I had them all on me, and I'm like, look at me. I saved my mom's life, you know. And yet I've got them all on me. So life was really crazy in my house. My mom was threatening to, you know, to shoot us one day, and my niece was living with us, and she called the cops on her, and we ended up taking her into Meadowood, and which is a hospital, and she started to get a little bit better, and she had almost like 25 years of recovery. So she finally decided enough is enough, and she started to get better. And then probably maybe a month and a half after that, my daughter came home from school, and she was with her cousin, and they both looked at me, and they just begged me to go to a meeting. And I'm like, I've done this before. I've read your big book. I've memorized your big book. And it never worked. So I ended up, for my daughter, she looked at me, and I could see the pain in her eyes, and I could see the pain in my niece's eyes. I went to a meeting. And she's like, well, you have to get a sponsor. Now, I never got a sponsor the first time around. When I walked out of that halfway house, I was done. I graduated. And I went for 15 years without ever taking a drink, so I'm good. So I went to a meeting, and she's like, you got to find a sponsor. And there was nobody. There was one woman I talked to, and she's like, oh, well, I don't deal with alcohol and drugs. So I was like, okay. No problem, you know. And then they begged me to go again the next night. And I went, and I, you know how you are when you're new and you're in here, and you're just, you know, anything was bugging me and pissing me off. And people were texting and calling through the meeting, and I was like, how rude is that? I mean, unfortunately, I still do it sometimes today myself. But I really thought it was rude, you know. And so we left that meeting, and I'm like, that's it. I'm done. There's nothing here for me, and there's no way anybody could help me. So they begged me to go to one more meeting, and that I went to South College Speakers Group meeting, and I walked out of there, and I had taken my daughter with me, so I couldn't leave her, but I would have. And I was sitting out, and I was smoking a cigarette. And actually, Cheryl had come up to me outside. Like, I have 10 women who came with me tonight, which is absolutely amazing. And they drove up with me. And she came out and started talking to me and asking me to tell a little bit about my story. And I did, and she ran inside, and she grabbed Paula, and they came out. And I was like, oh, okay. People are talking to me, actually. And I had actually went there and sat next to a woman and tried my hardest to talk. And again, this is difficult for me to do, to start small conversations, because my daughter's like, she's a good sponsor. She didn't pay any attention to me, so, of course, you know, that's not going to work. So they came up to me, gave me their number, and if it wasn't for the fact that my daughter looks so horribly upset with me, I would never have called, but I did, and I called the next day. And what she did for me was she took me through the steps right away. And, of course, she kept telling me, you need to set aside what you think you know, because you really don't know anything. Because I'm like, I've done this. I'm good. I know this. And she sat with me, And granted, I don't remember really much of what happened. All I know is that she spent time with me. And she went through meditation, and we went through, you know, the doctor's opinion. And she told me to read it, and of course I didn't, because I had already read it before. But I never got it until she was telling me about that. And the allergy part just clicked with me. It was like, wow. And when I left there that night, I felt really, really good. And I kept thinking, I'm going to have to go back into a detox, to a treatment center, because that's the only way I knew how to get sober, because that's how I got sober the first time. And within about a week, she had me on the fourth step. Now, I did my fourth step when I was 22, and I did it with a priest, and it was like confession. I mean, it was bad. It was really bad. You know, they didn't say write out a resentment. They said write out everything you've ever done wrong. And, you know, so I was not looking forward to this. And even though she told me just write out your resentments, I was still thinking, now there's got to be something more to this. Definitely got to be something more to this. And I dragged my feet on this for a while. And finally she said, just come over here. We'll do it together. And we did. And I walked away from that with the knowledge of knowing how selfish and self-centered that I had been. And that was something that I never, never, never thought of. I thought, I am the most giving person in the world. I will give anything to my daughter. I will buy her anything, was really what I would do. I don't give up my time, but I definitely would buy her anything that she wanted. I bought her cars, you know, everything. And I realized that I love to play a victim, and that's what I was living in. And that awakening was absolutely amazing. But the thing was, is along the way of doing this, I had made a little side deal with God that it would still be okay for me to take certain medications. And I was out there, I was helping people. And, of course, you know, some of the things I took made me really, really talkative, and I liked those even better. And so I'm in there, and I'm just going strong, and I'm like, but this is okay, because I'm good with God. God and I got a plan. And it was probably like about 6 months of that, and it was like one day I was like, I had no emotion. I was completely empty. And the only thing that was going through my mind was, is how did I get here again? How did I get to this miserable, horrible spot in my life where nothing matters? I love animals. I didn't even want to pet my dogs. I had nothing for my daughter. I had nothing for my husband, nothing for my mother, absolutely nothing inside of me. And it's a horrible place to be, horrible place to be. And I decided that I was worth more dead than alive. So I took stuff that I still say to this day I didn't take, but it doesn't matter. As my sponsor always tells me, it doesn't matter. But it was stuff I didn't even think I had, but I guess I was a very good hider of things, so I found it. And I woke up in a hospital, and my daughter and my husband are staring at me, and I'm like, oh, my God. We literally, with my whole family, have spent more time in hospitals because everybody was, you know, trying to off themselves because of this disease. I mean, we were in every month for somebody trying to off themselves. I guess it was my turn. I don't know. So I wake up there, and I look at them, and they've been waiting all day in there with me, and I'm like, guys, go. Just go. And I, you know, I knew that they were so disgusted with me. I was disgusted with myself. And they put me into Meadowood. And the thing was is that, you know, I didn't want to die, but I didn't want to live that way. But when I woke up the next day, the light came on. It was almost like I rebooted. I work in IT, so that's I rebooted, and the light came on, and I figured out what I needed to do. And the thing was is that I had to get honest, And it didn't matter. I could run around here and tell you guys that I'm happy and everything. But unless I was honest with myself and God, it wasn't going to matter. My sponsor didn't even know I was using. And so that was the start of my second time coming into AA. And at that time, I got it. And I got up every day and I read the third step prayer. I read page 62 because I have to remind myself how selfish and self-centered I am, because I forget. I wake up in a default mode of it's all about me. And so I've got to remind myself. And the thing is, I woke up, I decided that there were major decisions. I'm losing my house. I'd already lost cars. I was the major breadwinner in the family, and hadn't worked for 2 years, so obviously things weren't going real well. But I decided that it was time to get rid of the house and to move to an apartment and to live within our means. And it was the best decision I could ever make, to say that selling everything, and I mean I sold my wedding ring, I sold everything. And it was such an awesome feeling because I had so much material stuff that I collected, and it didn't mean anything. It didn't mean anything at all. And I realized that now I actually had people in my life. I had my daughter, I had my husband, I had my mother, and they were all getting better, and that I really wanted to develop those relationships. And that's what I started to do. Now, my mother and I we butt heads a lot. We live with each other. We're both in recovery. My daughter's in recovery. Having that many recovered alcoholics in the house can be kind of crazy at times. We're not always spiritually fit at the same time. And so in the beginning, I'm walking around. I'm saying these prayers. And my brother had come into town, and he moved my mother into a old person's home. And then he left and went to Michigan. And so now I got to go there every day. And I'm like, it would have been easier if she was just with me versus me driving there every day. And, of course, I'm saying prayers, dear God, please help me so I don't. Because whatever, if my mother said black, I said white. If she said white, I said black. It was just, whatever she said just irritated me. And I was talking to my sponsor, and I'm just trying to figure out, what is it? Why can I not be nice to my mother? And I'm walking into this home, and I'm saying, dear God, please don't let me be a bitch. And I get in there, and I'm the biggest bitch in the world to her. And I'm not understanding why this is happening. And I'm like, okay, well, I had to remove, dear God, let me be the best that I can be. Because whenever I said anything negative, I kind of became negative. That may sound weird, but if I put something negative in my prayers, I actually did the negative. I don't know why. I don't do that now, but I did then. And so I started taking that out, and it started to get a little bit easier. But then my mom was going to her meetings, and I'm going to my meetings. My daughter's going to hers. And we're not all working the same program. And my mom, of course, is not working it correctly, in my opinion. So, of course, I'm going to tell her how to work it. Didn't work. And I fought this, and and I'm like, I'm miserable, and she's fine with her decision. So something's got to change. And she was actually kind of in crazy mode too, so I guess we were both just crazy at the same time. And eventually, I was turning this over to God, and I was saying, I just got to let her be, and I had to understand the fact that she liked to argue, and I can't argue with her, because I like to be right too. And so eventually, the amazing thing is that my mom and I ended up, She takes a different path, but yet we're on the same journey. And she's very spiritual today. And I can honestly say, I always loved her, but I can honestly say I feel the love for her today. And that is a gift that I didn't think I would ever get. I mean, she takes me to work every morning, and I still get irritated, but I have the ability to say, oh, that's me, that's my ego talking, because I still like to be right all the time, especially when I'm with her. And we get along so much better now. that this program has given me that gift of being able to have my family members back, and not just in a high and just passing. We actually can have conversations. So along this journey of recovery, my niece was in here and was in here for 5 years, and I didn't at the time I was using when she was in, and when I came in, she went out, and her and I would go at it round and round. Whew, we could really. I'd always like to say she knows how to push my buttons, and my sponsor would say, "Well, then get rid of the buttons." And I did it sometimes, but not all the times. But, you know, I really wanted her to come back in and get well. And unfortunately, that did not happen. She was 25 years old, beautiful young girl, going to law school, and she took her own life this last September. And I have to say that AA and everybody in it stepped up so much. And they came in and we put together a funeral for her. I mean, we did this quick. It was like in like 3 days. And everybody, I mean, we had a room like this. Even more people show up for her memorial service. And I never in my life thought that I would have so much love in one room. And what everybody had done for this young lady, it was absolutely amazing. And without Alcoholics Anonymous, that would have never happened. And the thing was, her brother had tried to commit suicide, and then the next night she'd done the same thing. I told you we were in the hospital a lot. And he died, but he was brought back to life. And then the next night, it was a week later, she went into Meadowood, and then as soon as she got out, she took her life. And it just, this disease will kill. And I guess I never understood how we learn to justify our things. And I understood about her going back out because I did that myself. But I never, ever thought that she would do that. But I see it all the time in these rooms that people do this. And, you know, when somebody asks me to speak and I show up, I prefer to be out there, but AA has given me something. And if anybody has feels like they just can't live anymore, I just want to be to let you know that you can have a wonderful life. I mean, I had no job for 2.5 years, and all of a sudden, I got one. I had that one for a year, and I applied for 2 other jobs at the same time, and actually, both of them hired me. And I didn't think I was hireable. I didn't think that I could ever work for anybody else again. And now I have an awesome job. And my life is going very well. I still financially suck, but that takes time. And I'm okay with that because God does provide for me everything that I need. And I never saw that before. I was never grateful about the gifts that have been given to me. And I was never, ever grateful before about God's grace of taking away my desire to drink. That in itself is true miracle. And I can't see the clock. Oh, 8:43. Oh. All right, okay. Question? No. Let's see. I do have the privilege of sponsoring many women. And again, that is not something that I thought that I would ever do. If you would have told me 2 years ago that I would be in a room full of strangers and that I would offer my hand to somebody else, I would have told you, you are crazy. And what I found out by doing this, and I don't always want to do it, but I do know from my own experience that when I am in my own turmoil or in my own head, which I can get in there a lot, sometimes too much, I go to a meeting and I help another alcoholic. And whatever it is that I was thinking about or worried about, God already took care of. And since my experience shows me that, I now know that when I get like that, that's what I need to do. And I want to do it then. You know, I really want to do it. Because I don't like, I used to like sitting in pain. I don't like sitting in pain anymore. I like to feel good. And AA has given me, you know, you got 10 women who came with, I never had 10 friends in my entire life. And I have all these beautiful women in my life. And I never, ever expected to have friendships like that. Never. And to meet new people is actually, it's wonderful, you know. We go to a lot of conventions and we go to a lot of acts of recovery. And I've met so many wonderful people. We've gone to Colorado, and in Colorado, anywhere you go in Alcoholics Anonymous, it's like your home. You know, everybody is there. Everybody's there to greet you and to say welcome home. It's amazing to be able to go into any city, any town. As a matter of fact, I want to take a driving tour up to Maine. And we can stop in every little town and go to all the meetings. Because it's just fun to meet new people nowadays. And again, that's not something that I ever thought I would. The other thing that I have is because my daughter speaks, my mother speaks, and I speak. And when you see the different perspective, like when she's up here talking, and when my mom is, we all have three totally different perspectives. So it really shows me how delusional we can all be. Because I'm like, I don't remember that. Yeah. And they'll be like, no, that wasn't true, you know. Whatever it is true in our minds. And so it's given me a different way to look at everybody in my family, the ability to do that. And to be able to have these principles so that when I am at home, I can practice them, and I can practice them at work. And God's been good to me, really good. And I don't want to cut it short, but I'm running out of things to say. So I just would like to say thank you so much for asking me up here, and